Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body actually is? I found that out firsthand when I took the TrueAge test from True Diagnostic, and it completely changed the way I think about my health. With just a simple at-home test, you can find out your true biological age with no doctor visits or labs. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You mail in your sample using a prepaid package, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you will get a detailed online report about your aging and health. The test breaks down how fast 11 key systems like your heart, brain, liver, and lungs are aging, plus 75 longevity biomarkers covering things like metabolic health, immune response, and disease risk. Your biological age, how old your cells and organs really are, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, and dementia. That's why knowing it can be life-changing, and that's exactly what TrueAge helps you do. They made it so easy to get my blood drawn, show me my results, and give me the data so I could make the perfect action plan for me to better my health. If you're serious about longevity or just curious about what your body's real age is, head to TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code Crypto101 for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code Crypto101 for 20% off. Your future self will thank you. Cold mornings, holiday plans. This is when I need my wardrobe to just work. That's why I'm all about Quince. They make it easy to look sharp, feel good, and find gifts that last. From Mongolian cashmere sweaters to Italian wool coats, Quince pieces are crafted from premium materials and built to hold up without the luxury markup. Quince makes the essentials every guy needs, Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, Italian wool coats that look and feel designer, and denim and chinos that fit just right. Their outerwear lineup is no joke, guys. You have to go check it out. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted factories that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By cutting out the middleman and traditional markup, Quince delivers the same quality as luxury brands at a fraction of the price. It's everything you actually want to wear. Built to hold up season after season. Guys, the down jacket I picked up from Quince is getting me through the cold winter when I go up north to visit my family. I also got an awesome vest that I like to wear down here in Florida when the weather gets colder as well. It looks super expensive and designer, but again, it's a fraction of the price. Guys, get your wardrobe sorted and your gift list handled this holiday season with Quince. Don't wait. Go to Quince.com/crypto101 for free shipping on your orders and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's Quince, Quince.com/crypto101. You'll get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/crypto101. You'll be glad you did. Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Crypto Rundown, where we talk about everything that's going on in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamental in the news to the technicals on the charts. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to, and then we package it and we bring it to you all in under an hour. And man, it's going to be an electric episode. We're getting back into these. I mean, it's been a busy wrap and kind of end to this year. But we want to make sure that we do these before we go in the holiday season and take a little bit of a break. And I mean, today's episode is going to be one of the most packed ones that we've had in a while. We have all sorts of breaking news. We have unemployment data. We have JP Morgan back in here with some really significant headlines. And so just a lot of other things to talk about. I mean, I'm not even going to spoil it before we get into it. But crypto seeing a lot of institutional and large kind of scale whale-like attention. And it's important for everyone to understand these things, because in a volatile time like this one, there's a lot going on and it feels like people don't know which way to look. They see price action falling further. They see the fundamentals and adoption growing. They're seeing crypto kind of move in the right direction from a fundamental standpoint. But then they look at the charts and they're saying, I'm still a little bit scared and nervous about why there's a disconnect. And so we're going to be breaking all of that down in today's episode. And of course, I cannot do this without the one and only super producer, TiVo.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Brennan. Excited to be here. Thinking about changing the name of the show from Crypto 101 to Fundamentals 101, because it is another episode where the fundamentals certainly are strong. The news is strong, and we're still kind of getting questions around the price action, which, again, as we've kind of hammered home the last couple episodes, isn't the funnest when the price action doesn't go the way you want it. But That's kind of what makes an investor and what makes a trader is when, you know, things necessarily aren't going your way. You got to investigate, figure out why and challenge your thesis. And I think this show has done a great job over the last month plus of kind of giving the tools and the knowledge to help, you know, help you make those decisions. And it's certainly, I know we talk about on the team, Brian, me, you, and it's like, we love doing these because mm-hmm. it's fun and we like doing the show with each other, but it actually really helps us develop our own thesis and challenge the way we think and help us with our investing. So excited to be here with you.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just need to talk through things out loud and it helps you think through it in a different way and just talk through it with someone else. You get a different perspective. You hear someone say something in a different way than you would have maybe said it or thought about it. And it just gives you a different perspective. So I know it helps myself. I know it helps you. And hopefully to all the listeners out there, it helps you as well. And again, we love doing these things. So, I mean, let's just kick this off. Normally, we start with the charts or the most important headline. But today, I want to kick things off by just looking at some breaking news that we have. Because you're tuning in here, you get it right away. So two forms of breaking news today, TiVo. It's not every day we get two, but let's talk about unemployment because those numbers just came out. You know, it's financial data that comes out from time to time here. And I think it's important to look at that. And so the number was expected to be 4.4%. It was expected to be 4.5%. And it came in worse than expected at 4.6%. So what this means is that the unemployment numbers came in worse than expected. And this is the highest that we have seen it since September of 2021, pretty much making four-year highs for the unemployment numbers. So this is a double-edged sword. And the reason why we even bring this up, you're going to say, Brendan, this is a crypto show. Why in the world are we talking about this kind of financial data? Well, that's because it affects all of the risk-on assets. And crypto, whether you like it or not, is still largely considered a risk-on asset. So if people are trying to become more risk-on or more risk-off, that's going to impact crypto prices in one way or another. So at a very basic level, worse unemployment makes people not want to go spend their money on more risky assets, which could hurt the price of Bitcoin. However, we are back in the cycle, TiVo. We are back in the cycle of good news is bad news is good news, all because of interest rates, which also affect the risk on and risk off markets. So the fact that we have this worse than expected employment data means that there's a higher chance that we get of a rate cut. I saw it go over 30-something percent after this news came out. So now that there's a higher percentage chance for a rate cut, that outweighs the bad unemployment data and is actually now a good thing. And you're saying, what in the world? My brain just went into a blender. I don't blame you. It's doesn't always make the most logical sense. But again, the way that this works is because Bitcoin is considered on the higher end of the risk on spectrum, you have the rate cuts essentially being of more importance and significance than what the unemployment data is, at least for the time being right now, because it's not anything too crazy. And so people are saying, okay, well, the fact that we got bad news is actually good news because it raises the chance for more rate cuts next year, which the crypto market has historically responded pretty positively to. So yeah, I mean, Tiva, what do we say? Good news is bad news. Bad news is good news. It's a
change of winds, I think, in the macro risk markets. I think October 10th, as we've talked about on this show, that the biggest liquidation in crypto history is still kind of playing out, right? Flushing out. We never saw that dead body. Remember the quote unquote dead body that would rise to the surface? We haven't seen that, which I find is really interesting. And, you know, I guess since it hasn't come out, whereas like Tom Lee and Scaramucci said they know who it is, but they won't say it. I don't know. I was really interested in trying to figure out more around that because I think that was such a, again, the biggest liquidation in crypto history, but like we don't have a lot of information since then. So I don't know. That kind of has been lingering. And I think you have to look at overall with like this jobs data plus the AI trade, right? So a lot of the AI trade, especially over the last 6 months to a year, has been high risk on, right? The valuation of these companies are getting higher. People are levering up. So it's like if you're a trader that wants high beta, high risk, you know, that AI trade slash crypto trade is kind of the same person. So I think some of that money kind of might have gone to two sides of the coin, if that makes sense, where, you know, back when FTX happened and at the bottom and, you know, planning to buy the dip on that and then ride this thing for the last couple of years like you have from 18,000 to 120. I don't think at that time, I wasn't saying it, I didn't see anybody really pounding the fist for this crazy AI trade that developed over the last 3 years too. So I think that's something that I've really learned over this last year to digest is like, hey, the risk on money has gone different ways. And so now that we're kind of digesting this jobs data, we're digesting the new Fed, and then all of a sudden, again, this is what makes a market, but all of a sudden these AI companies are getting questioned. And it used to be 6 to 8 months ago, it was, if you're spending more on CapEx, your stock's going to go up because you're investing in the future. Now it's like, whoa, you're spending too much money. And because like Google and Apple were left for dead. It was like, oh, they're not spending any money. Apple's dead. Google's going to get beat by OpenAI. Now it's reversed. Apple and Google are leading the Mag 7. Mm-hmm. And so that money, that risk money sloshing around. And so I think that's taking away from some crypto where it's just kind of a pause. Plus October 10th, you can't forget about that being a historic event and really not getting the answers that I think the community would like.
Hey, speaking of which, if you want to see how a top pro makes winning altcoin and crypto trades, Brendan Veman is doing a live over-the-shoulder trading session this week. All right, he's going to reveal both the coins that he's watching closely right now, and he's going to walk us through his trade ideas, ones that investors could potentially execute on right away. It's like getting what I would call a masterclass in real-time trading for absolutely free. Plus, you're going to walk away with some altcoin picks that might be poised for their next big moves. So here's what all you got to do. Head to www.cryptorevolution.com/masterclass to save your spot now.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas, any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
Issued by WebBank. To qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Some exclusions to instant rewards apply. This is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. Check Gemini's website for more details on rates and fees.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Yeah, and you know, we're going to talk more about this because I think that there's three threats that are looming out there right now, and we'll get into these in just a little bit. But before we do that, I mean, let's cover some more news. I want to make sure we get like a lot of these big headlines out of the way. Mm-hmm. And we talk about some of the good stuff before we go into any of the bad things. But this one shocked me. I actually had to fact check this last night and make sure that this was real. And it is. Justin, NASDAQ is moving forward with a 24/7 stock trading model that is expected to have 24-hour trading on weekdays by Q2. So I'm confused by this, TiVo. And again, this literally just released. There's not a ton of information about this. My initial thought is, if they're going to make it 24/7, is it going to be using blockchain technology? Are things going to be tokenized? Or is this going to be them updating their internal systems to do this on their own? There's not really a clear answer yet. They are filing to do this because I believe they need approval. There's not a ton of information. Now, in this post, and maybe we can find another post, TiVo. This is the one that I gave, so you know it's kind of on me. But the reason I was confused about this is because it says that they want to move forward with a 24/7, which means 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And then it says expected to have 24-hour trading days only on weekdays. So then You see what I mean? The Polymarket post was a little bit it didn't make as much sense because it was saying 24/7 and then it only said 24/5.
Right.
Because it said only on weekdays. So I'm confused. You know, what are they going to be doing here? Is it going to be 24/7? Is it going to be 24/5? And again, this stuff just launched and it looks more like...
Here we go. Maybe this one. Again, we're just pulling from X here. So it just, this news just dropped. But 23/5 during the week starting next year. And then by the end of next year, by the end of 26, 24/7. So kind of a rollout.
Yeah. And then the post below that says they're going to move forward with, and then there it is again, 24/7 by the end. So, I mean, we'll have to come back and circle around on this. Maybe I think you're right in that the 23/5 or the 24/5 is what comes out first. They test it, right? They have kind of the test flight and then they come out with 24/7.
Welcome to the show, huh? I mean, these traditional TradFi traders have to be like kicking and punching air right now because,
yeah.
Like that's, I mean, it's kind of already a global market, but with the, I don't know. I think this is going to stir some feathers.
I saw people raging online about this.
They're not going to have a life. Like you're not like, imagine managing like a big fund. Like it's going to be very, very, very hard, but hey, we're in the trenches. We live this life.
But here's the thing. And the reason why we say this is because what you now have are all of these crypto related plays and these spot ETFs that have been trading on the stock market, right? The equities market. So now those are all of a sudden going to be 24/7. And that was the appeal. One of the appeals of crypto is like, hey, these can be 24/7 and they're battle tested. I mean, Bitcoin being around now for as long as it have, you know, we have something that has more of a decade experience of never going offline, never faulting, never having issues. And that's kind of the appeal. And you get 24/7 exposure and you can access it whenever you want and there's no control over it. And it looks as if crypto is putting pressure. I mean, we've seen the crypto market grow to $3 trillion in market cap. It looks like it is putting pressure on equities to do something similar. And they're looking at the crypto market. They're seeing it take some market share. And they're saying, hey, you know, we probably need to integrate features like this as well. We've seen the crypto market do it for well over a decade, and it's worked out great, and they've grown. We can probably integrate something like this as well. Again, the big kind of question that it comes back to is this going to be an integrated form of blockchain to make sure that it stays up 24/7? Or is this going to be their own servers and stuff? Because I would be somewhat skeptical of how a more centralized product would run 24/7. I think eventually you're going to have some downside issues. You're going to have some server issues. And you know what I mean? Because that's an issue that we see with like a lot of centralized tech. It's like eventually something happens, a power outage, something. Granted, there are holidays and breaks and stuff. So maybe that's when maintenance can be done. But that's kind of the beauty of the decentralized model is that you can do work or you can take one node offline or 10 nodes offline because the other ones are going to pick up the weight. But in a centralized model, that's not the case. So the question is like how long can they run for before something needs to be upgraded or changed? And then are moving forward, if we do this, are there going to have to be just down days for the stock market where it's like, hey, everyone, we need to work on the infrastructure and update things. No trading today. Like that's a possibility. And I'm sure there's going to be a million workarounds for this in the future. But yeah, I mean, interesting stuff, man. I have so many questions that I want answered. And
I'm sure it's coming. I mean, it's inevitable as much as the definitely TradFi is not going to like it. It's like, you know, between crypto over the last decade plus, and then obviously Robinhood rolled out 24/7 trading for a lot of stocks, like the big ones like NVIDIA and Google, a lot of things, and Hood, their own stock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's coming. I think it's a double-edged sword. I think it obviously gives a lot of opportunity. Like when we've just seen just volatility has been just insane recently. It's like I feel like it could be for your average retail trader if they don't have, you know, good tendencies, education, and trading strategies. Like you're gonna be getting shaken out at 9 o'clock at night, you know, on a Sunday because you're scared type of thing.
Yeah.
So sometimes the ability to not sell when the volatility is high might help like your average trader. You know, if they're trying to go out to dinner, it's Wednesday at 7 and, you know, their stock's falling off a cliff. They're not going to know what to do. So I don't know.
It's Friday at midnight. You've had one too many drinks and you're making horrible decisions.
We don't do that. We don't do that here.
No one would ever do that. No one would ever.
That's great. All right, let's move on to the charts. I think I know this week is as we come to the end of the year, we're doing our last trading session with you on Thursday. So if people are interested, obviously the volatility has been high. It's a great time to learn technical analysis. You come to this show to watch Brendan do it usually every week. So he's going to do a session now. If you're interested, he has a 1-hour live trading session this Thursday. I put the link in YouTube. I'll put the link in the podcast as well. So go in and check that link if you're somebody that's interested in kind of learning more. He's going to do a 1-hour live trading session this Thursday. Go sign up for it in the link below.
Yeah, completely for free. Would love to see everyone there. We're going to talk about Bitcoin and some other cryptos as well. And we're going to go a bit deeper than we do right here. But this is what we see on Bitcoin right now. You know, Bitcoin continuing the downtrend from what we saw around October 6th, which is when we hit the all-time high, and then 10th, which was that large liquidation event. And so as we've said for a while, kind of just lower lows, lower highs on a pretty routine basis. And most recently here, we're seeing what was really good structure last week start to break here, TiVo. Bitcoin breaking some of this bullish structure that we've had, especially short-term structure. And so for the bulk of this move, I mean, ever since the initial breakdown, Bitcoin had never really held above that 20-day moving average. You had kind of the one fake out here where it spent 2 days above, and this was immediately just followed up by a ton of selling pressure. This time around was a little bit different. You saw consistent higher lows. You saw a relatively flat level of support, which turned into a climbing level support as after this most recent move. But you saw rising support. You know, we are trading and closing and using this 20-day moving average as support. Pressure looked like it was squeezing back to the upside. The 20 started to have a little bit curl back upwards. And then after the news came out last week, the FOMC and the Federal Reserve rate cutting news, after that, you know, prices just started to tank. You know, it happened on Wednesday. Thursday, we got the news. And then Thursday was like digestion day. And then, you know, moving from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, it was just all down, all red days from there on out. And what we started to do is we broke the 20-day moving average. We broke our higher lows and we broke our support line. And so what we have here is a pretty clear rejection off the highs. And then now kind of rejections of the short-term moving averages, which we were using as a support area. So when we kind of look at this, you know, it's looking a little bit more like an inverse break, hook and go, kind of the break to the downside, testing those former levels and rejecting them, which isn't usually a great thing to see here for Bitcoin. So I think a little bit of pessimism is coming back in as we're looking at this. And again, it's just not a great thing to see any kind of the first real sense of like short-term bullish structure that we get. And then you just get it all kind of broken over the weekend. And again, not a great thing to see here for Bitcoin. The emphasis I want to place on this is that this is short-term structure, right? I'm not saying midterm. I'm not saying long-term. Long-term structure, you know, I think you could argue is like still very much intact. You know, you look at this and you're not like, oh my gosh, we're in some horrible downtrend. It's like, no, over the past couple of years, very, very clear uptrend. It's the short-term structure of what we've seen, you know, really over the last two or so months, barely 2 months. And that's really been it for Bitcoin. Now, for altcoins, I think you have some midterm, very clear downtrend from the midterm timeframe. Because for altcoins, it's about 6 months of bear market so far, if you even want to call it that. But for Bitcoin, it's only been about 2 months. But when we're looking at this, I just want to kind of temper expectations. You know, we're still below all three of the major moving averages. We're breaking support. We're kind of rejecting some of those prior support areas. Just generally not a big, not a great thing to see. I think the number one thing I want to watch out for here is, can we form a higher swing low off this relative strength index? And if we do, like, that'll be a huge opportunity, in my opinion. But it's something that has not happened yet, and I'm going to still kind of keep an eye out on. Besides this, you know, you have ETH, which was actually outperforming Bitcoin on this move to the upside. Even this is starting to come back in. I mean, Bitcoin's green 1%, ETH's red 1% today. And the whole crypto market's kind of just all over the place. You have some green, some red, just depends on the project, but it's pretty mixed emotions. But again, as things are kind of consolidating, you're getting kind of rejections, and on a lot of altcoins, you continue to get lower lows. So at a time like this, altcoins are remaining more risky. They kind of continue to underperform. And it makes me want to be a little bit more risk off and just kind of sit on my hands for a bit, get a little bit more data, get some more information. And as more of that comes out, I'll probably become more risk on. But I'm still waiting for it. So I'm going to do a little bit of DCAing. I'm going to add some things that I have really long-term conviction on, things that are probably a little bit lower in risk, not super risky. And I'm okay doing some dollar cost averaging there, but I'm not trying to do anything too crazy until, again, we get a little bit of a clearer picture. And that's just the way that I look at the markets right now. So, you know, that's what we're seeing on the charts.
Yeah, just, again, it's a digesting time, kind of basically what we said kind of when we were talking about the jobs data coming out, and just the macro market overall seems to be kind of deciding, do we want risk on, do we want risk off? It's an interesting time. And I think as the Fed decision comes into play in 26, we know the president wants a dove in the Fed chair and for rates to be lower. So again, it's a don't fight the Fed tape, but how do we get there? And there's still a couple of decisions with Powell. But then even when I saw this stat, even when the Fed chair gets announced, I believe it takes on average like 70 to 90 days Correct. To get processed. And to, so in reality, and this is, I've been talking about the Fed thing is like kind of one of my top storylines of 26, which I'm sure it will be for a lot of people. But I was kind of in the thought of, I guess I didn't understand. I got educated on it a little more of the process of getting, put into the seat. It's going to take much longer than I thought. I thought they would be there in the spring, basically. Okay, Fed chair, Powell's done, and then you just pop somebody else in there. At this rate, it looks like it's going to be like a summer, end of summer. I mean, definitely the second half of 26. So that storyline of getting that Fed chair in there and seeing how that new Fed reacts is a back end of 26. And then we have the midterms election back end of 26. So the storylines are lining up to be quite dramatic. And I think the volatility probably continues with crypto along with the iTrade. So it'll be an exciting 26, but there's going to be a lot to parse through.
Yeah, there is, man. And I mean, I think there's a lot of questions as well. Like you're right. There's midterms coming up. And so I'm obviously like, either the stock market, and I would argue now the crypto market plays a little bit of a role in that you had, like, in the last election, believe it or not, I mean, it was a serious voting point. People had a lot of crypto. They felt like they weren't treated right. And that kind of shifted their views about how crypto would be looked at. So if crypto prices are down a lot going into the midterm elections, again, we never take a side left or right over here. But I think it's okay to recognize that if crypto is down a lot after people thought that they were voting for better stuff. And it's not the job of the government to prop up the crypto market as well. So I think there's that to understand. But, you know, that's just the way that human emotion works, right? If the stock market was in the absolute gutter, guess what? More people are probably going to vote for the opposing party. That's just the way it works. I think you could probably say the same thing for crypto. You know, crypto, a lot of altcoins have been in the gutter for a bit now, and people are hurt by it, right? The average altcoin holder is not in a super happy place for the moment, but you know, maybe that's a factor that comes in here. So is there some sort of bump? Are they going to try to do something? You know, we'll see, but you're right in the sense that midterms are going to offer a lot of pressure from the Fed side, and you have that, but then from like the election side as well, I think people are going to look at like equities and crypto as in terms of their performance. And let's see what happens. I think it's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind, because there always is speculation, and it's not something that you can prove. But it's speculation that politicians try to prop up industries going into any election season. And it makes sense. But fingers crossed here, I guess, you know, for someone who is a crypto holder, again, no political side, for someone who's a crypto holder, I want the values to go up. So hopefully we see some sort of a bump kind of going into that. And in the very least, it gives us some long opportunities or some take profit opportunities or something. But you know what else we have, TiVo? We have the three big threats, and you referenced this earlier, and I want to come back to it because there is a little bit of fear just, you know, about the current state of Bitcoin. I've spent some time, we've talked to Matt Hogan, and we've talked to some different asset managers and some big people in the space, you know, even SharpLink. We just talked to them about this, and, you know, stay tuned for that pod. It'll be coming out soon. But I think there's three primary things that you need to look at on Bitcoin right now in terms of the threat. Number one is Bitcoin's underperformance, right? People have looked at gold, they've looked at silver, they've looked at the stock market, you know, things like NASDAQ and the S&P, and they've said, you know, why is Bitcoin, why has crypto been underperforming so much compared to these other verticals? You know, they all kind of continue to go to new highs, float around the all-time highs. You know, Bitcoin and crypto are just not there, and they haven't been there for months. So I think that's the first threat and the first pain point is kind of the underperformance that we've seen. Number two, and some of these are going to tie into each other, so just let me get through all of them before, you know, we get angry and we type at me. But number two is the AI trade, right? There's been a lot of attention around this AI trade. And I think number one, that has stolen some market share. You know, people who are investing in crypto, I think that that has stolen some of the capital that probably would have gone towards crypto. People are all about this AI trade and this tech trade, and we're seeing just a ton of attention come on that end. Now that, I mean, if you look at NASDAQ, it's up 60% since April. I mean, that's almost unheard of. NASDAQ being up 60% since April, and there's been no double-digit pullbacks so far. And so it kind of begs the question, like, hey, eventually it's natural to get a 10 to 20% pullback, especially running 60% in 6 months or something like that, you know, averaging your annual return every single month for 6 months straight. It's crazy. So at some point, you know, there's going to be a pullback from this AI trade and probably more continuation to the upside after that. But at some point, there's going to be probably a 10 to 20% pullback. And I've even heard Tom Lee and other people talk about this idea. And the question is, okay, well, what kind of ripple effects does that have on crypto? You know, if there have been a lot of favorable factors for the crypto market, right? Very positive administration, very positive regulation. You have rates being cut consistently. You have tech booming. You have metals booming. You have everything kind of working in crypto's favor, and it's, you know, lagging a little bit. You know, what happens if the macro conditions worsen a little bit more and NASDAQ isn't doing so well and equities aren't, you know, could that have some downside exposure? And I think so. You know, I think that's what people are afraid of. You know, if NASDAQ pulls 10, 15, 20%, what's going to happen to the price of Bitcoin and crypto? And I think there's a little bit of fear around that and that whole AI thing softening. The third one is just that large liquidation event. And that was the big thing that has impacted crypto. So when people look, why has and ask, why has crypto been underperforming? It's largely due to that liquidation event, Tivo. I mean, the largest single-day liquidation that we've ever seen, about $20 billion in liquidations. It is a critical event. And the ripple effects have continued to be felt throughout all of the crypto market. And so I think that is playing a role in point number one, which was Bitcoin's underperformance. And I think that that is something that we're hopefully beginning to get over. Maybe we have another move down. You know, I can't tell the future. But I think those are the three things that are on the front of everyone's mind. And so they're saying, okay, well, there's been underperformance. There has been this AI trade that we're nervous about. And then there is the large liquidation event as well. And I think that has been the number one contributor and the number one factor to why crypto has been underperforming and why we've been seeing the price action. So we're going to continue to kind of cover those. But again, we like to talk about all of the sides. I think it's important to look at the, the bullish, the bearish, the good, the bad, everything in between. And that's the point of the show is, you know, listen, we talk about a lot of the good stuff. I mean, because we believe that most of the stuff happening in the space is good. But we also don't want to just sugarcoat it and say everything's sunshine and rainbows. Like, we like to talk about everything that's going on so that you all that are listening in can get the full picture. And so there are some things to kind of just be wary about. And again, in the long term, I want to clarify, we think crypto is going to do great things. We think it's going to go to new, we think Bitcoin can hit new all-time highs. We think it can go a lot higher. We're not worried about the long term. But in the immediate time frame, we want to talk about everything. And that includes some of the bad things, Tivo.
Well, I love your opinion on kind of like what I said, where the money got distributed elsewhere in risk assets, right? Like, I think I said this on the show. I had a quote, and I didn't think about it as deep as I have, like, kind of Monday morning quarterbacking it. But I was like, everybody's asking where altcoin season is. I go, it's happening. Look at the stock market. Look at, like, Circle. When Circle IPO'd, it was boom, you know, 600-700%. At Gemini, go boom, 100%. And then all these quantum computing stocks went up 500%. Down 70%, back up 600%. And that's all happened in this year.
Yeah.
That's stuff that we saw in the altcoin market years ago. And I was kind of saying it like tongue in cheek, like, oh, where's the altcoin season? We thought it would maybe transition into crypto a little bit more, or especially the altcoins a little bit more this year. And it hasn't, but there was a lot of risk taking, high flying leverage liquidity in the crypto market and in the traditional market as well, with quantum stocks, AI stocks. And I feel like just kind of that liquidity and capital maybe got dispersed among different asset classes more than, you know, what anybody thought, really.
Yeah. And I think you're right. And kind of feeding into the whole cycle, I mean, people are looking at it now and saying, you know, will the four-year cycle hold? And is this going to be a thorn in our side over the next year? And it's interesting, and we've talked about this a couple of times, but almost everyone that we've had on the podcast is no longer believing in the four-year cycle. It doesn't matter who it is. If you're from a bank, you're an asset manager, you're someone who's building in the space, you're from a treasury, you know, whatever. I would say 90%+ of the people are disagreeing with the idea of a four-year cycle, and it kind of continuing in the same way that we've seen it before. And this is another headline where, you know, Bitwise CEO Matt Hogan says Bitcoin will break the four-year cycle and set new all-time highs next year. Now, we bring this up because we did a podcast with Matt Hogan. When did that come out? What, a couple of weeks ago, Tivo?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. He talked about this 2 weeks ago on the podcast. So if you're not tuning into these podcasts, we urge you to. This article came out this morning at, 5 a.m. It came out 5 hours ago. We put out the same information 2 weeks ago because we have access and we get to talk to all the leaders in the space, and we love doing it, and we bring it to you all before it's mainstream, before it's in the news, before it's publicly available to everyone else. We are talking to these people and publishing this stuff. So shout out to the podcast, shout out to TiVo for booking these things and getting these people and setting it all up and orchestrating it. But you get all the information here first. You get it here first, everyone. So had to pat ourselves on the back a little bit, TiVo, because I think we deserved it, kind of getting this info a couple weeks in advance. But listen, I agree. I would agree with Matt Hogan here and with a lot of the other podcasts. I think that we are seeing the structure of the four-year cycle break, and we've been seeing it for years. In fact, you know, let me share one quick chart, and then we will move on. But I just want everyone to kind of visualize what this looks like, because you've seen the structure of the four-year cycle slowly start to shift and break in recent years. So if we look at this real fast, and we look at Bitcoin dominance, for example, here's what those cycles look like. You can see the 2017 cycle where Bitcoin dominance runs up and then altcoin season begins very quick. The entire cycle, very quick. Next cycle, a bit longer, and then it goes up. Now what we're seeing right now, much more elongated. So you're seeing not only the volatility, but also the time that it takes to do these cycles. You're seeing them vary, not even vary, you're seeing them extend and elongate and become less volatile over longer periods of time. And you're seeing them just kind of dissipate and go away. And so when you're looking at it, I think this is important to understand in looking at this chart of how altcoin season and how the four-year cycle has changed. And it looks as if we're starting to break that cycle and move away from it, at least in the sense that we're used to it from some of the 2021, 2017 cycles. It kind of looks like we are shifting away from that. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, because they were volatile and they were quick. You know, it was a crazy time for sure. But as the industry grows, I think that that's just expected.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. It's a great point. And that's what people have said, especially for the bigger assets, is maybe volatility dampens down a little bit, but maybe not. Also, like, you know, Bitcoin's down, 30%, and the industry's dead. Actually, we'll pinpoint that for the end, because that's how we're going to wrap up the show, is talking about how all the times the sky's been falling and crypto's been dead and Bitcoin's dead. We'll save that for the end of the show. A fun little lighthearted tidbit there. But let's get back into the fundamentals. As you said, the Bitwise news got plucked from our podcast. Credit to us. You're in the right place for listening to all the news that you need to educate yourself. But what's going on? Brendan, is there anything bullish? Is there any good news going on? Of course, that's like literally all this show's about. Again, I said at the top of the program, we're going to change it to Fundamentals 101. How about JP Morgan? I mean, I came up with the term. McNutt loves this one. Jamie Crypto Diamond. JP Morgan's launching a tokenized money market fund on Ethereum. And so this is kind of the theory, is you know, long-term technological advancement, is it going to be the fundamentals are going to be built before the price action follows? That's the thesis. Again, that's the thesis from, I think, anybody who's studying, you know, one-on-one of investments. Am I investing in this today, or am I investing in this because it's going to grow in years? And that's what, you know, the average investor should be looking at for any company. That's the stuff that Tom Lee and Kathy Wood go on TV and talk about all the time. But our friends over at Milk Road just kind of had a nice little write up here. The fund name is going to be called Money, M-O-N-Y, and just a normal money market fund. But the fact that it is going to be built on Ethereum, I think, is really interesting. Again, J.P. Morgan seems to be siding with Ethereum. From all the news that we've seen, they also will touch on Bitcoin next, but it's going to open up to obviously some larger investors, individuals with at least 5 million and institutions with 25 million. There's going to be $1 million minimum. But again, just very interesting that they're building this. I don't think this means that all their money market funds overnight are going to turn into this, but I think it's a test. Yeah. Okay. How is this going to work? Is it going to be clean? Is it going to bring more yield? What options are you going to be able to do when you're in this money market fund? How can you lend out, you know, and maybe there's some staking options and getting more yield, and there's more options of what you can do with your money in it. I think it's going to be interesting to see, and the success of it will be whether it grows or not, but it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, it is. And like, it's a lot of money. I mean, it's not a million, it's not 10 million, it's $100 million fund. It's crazy. And they're not the first people to do this kind of thing. And, you know, we've seen different forms of like tokenized funds and blockchain funds. And we've seen different ones from a lot of these big players, you know, most notably BlackRock. And I believe VanEck has one, although theirs might be on Solana. But there's a bunch of groups that have these. And JP Morgan is saying, hey, we see the value here. We're going to expand into this. And it's just part of a larger trend. It's hard to believe that if JP Morgan, right, the world's largest bank, BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, and a lot of these other ones as well, obviously, if they're betting on this, it's hard to believe that Ethereum's going to be going anywhere. If they are just starting their building now, if they are all betting on this, number one, I don't think it's going anywhere. And number two, I think it plays a role in the future. And so how do we get exposure? Well, we look at Ethereum in terms of exposure. So when we see prices down, you know, 40% or whatever it is right now from the highs, I still view it as a discount, man. And again, you know, maybe we have a little bit more downside. We talked about some of the catalysts, but when in doubt, zoom out. I think it's hard to have a pretty negative view of Ethereum way down the road. And, you know, we can't aim and predict the future, but when you see all this stuff happening, it's really hard to bet against Ethereum, mm-hmm. right? And so that's my big takeaway.
And yeah. I agree. Mean,
feeding into that point, you know, what's another huge part of Ethereum? It's stable coins. And even those continue to grow. We have two articles for this that we can show everyone.
Well, one more thing about JP Morgan, just before we move on to stable coins, is they're accepting collateral for loans. And you've kind of seen this, a bunch of different banks, institutions, and trading vehicles are starting to accept, you know, Bitcoin as collateral, which I think is, you know, it's not breaking news that it's being accepted as collateral. They're not the first to do it, but just more and more are starting to do it, which I think, again, is bullish for Bitcoin, just the more and more acceptance. But let's move on to, I know Ethereum is more tied to stablecoins, so we can start talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, Red Dot just raised $107 million on their Series B to expand their stablecoin payments platform. So, I mean, there's more happening here. Again, they're continuing to raise money, not a small amount of money either. There's a lot of attention. There's a lot of demand for infrastructure to be built out for this stuff. And that's why it's happening in the first place. So stablecoins, infrastructure building, demand is increasing. That's why you're seeing this. They're raising $107 million. Don't let it go under the radar. You know, kind of take it for what it is. And then the next one, Visa is going to be launching their stablecoin settlement in the U.S. via Circle's USDC. And, you know, this one's a little bit different because I believe there's going to be, and there already is some structure on Solana in regards to Visa, but they're going to be working with Solana here too. And this kind of paints into our narrative of we don't think that there's a one winner beats all, right? We're not maxis over here. We don't believe in just Bitcoin. We don't believe in just Ethereum. We don't believe in just Solana or just XRP or fill in the blank. you know, we believe that Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, like all these blockchains can coexist alongside each other. And then they can be used for different groups, for different things. And right now it does look like a lot of institutional demand is more so Ethereum and more retail demand is Solana. But that's starting to shift. And, you know, we're seeing both. Both get a ton of activity and a ton of interest. So you're looking at Visa, you're looking at Red Dot Pay. A lot of stuff going on here. In fact, there's a picture right below those links, TiVo. And let's throw that one on the screen too, because it feeds into what we were just talking about. And, you know, yeah, I mean, look at this. Banks are settling payments with Visa on Solana, and they're already at a $3.5 billion run rate. And so what this means is that, you know, as it says in the picture, the settlement pilot reaches $3.5 billion in annualized run rate as of the end of November, according to Visa. So, I mean, guys, this stuff is coming. It really is, and we're moving fast, and we're setting it up, but it still looks like we're in the early innings of this, where the infrastructure is still getting set, the kind of onboarding has just begun. Like, I don't think we're in the late stages of this, and we're seeing headlines like this would, I would say, aim us more towards the start or maybe the second or third inning as opposed to the end. So keep that in the back of your mind, but just a lot going on.
Yeah, and there's people that continue to buy. So I think, you know, we cover anybody that makes big buys on the show. Obviously, Sailor this week bought some more Bitcoin, and Kathy Wood's buying. She's literally selling stocks to go buy, you know, different crypto. I mean, I guess there's still stocks, but crypto, you know, favored stocks. She's pulling out of some of her AI trade. I know she trimmed some of her Tesla, and they're going and they're buying Bitmine. They're buying basically Tom Lee's Ethereum treasury. They're buying Hood. I saw she's buying some, I have the full list here, Circle, Bullish, Coin, BMNR. So it's like, you know, this is where some of the big money's flowing, and these things aren't, you know, 6 months, a year, even 2 years. These are longer term, you know, plays traditionally for these large whales.
They are, man. And, you know, people have memed on Kathy in recent years, but let me say her performance here this year is mighty good. You know, you look at ARK off those lows, she's been crushing it. And now, you're right, she's getting more crypto exposure, selling off other stocks, looking at crypto as an ultimate area of value down here. And we love to see it.
Yeah, 1 year for ARK, 30%. Can't complain about that. All time for ARK, 290%. That goes back to 2015. She had a big run up in COVID and then obviously crashed down with everything else. ARK hasn't gotten back to its highs, but I think it transitioned from kind of, if you're talking about ARK specifically, it was that the change of the internet, COVID, that internet play and buying the bottom of all those internet stocks like a Zoom.
Yeah.
And then transitioning out of that during the downturn of 22 and into this AI/crypto trade is going to take ARK to new all-time highs if it can get there.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, I mean, you look at it, you know, up 30% on the year. NASDAQ's up, I think, 19%. I think SPY's up 15%. Bitcoin's red on the year. So, like, you know, she's been outperforming almost all of the major assets here.
She takes some heat, and rightfully so. I mean, everybody should. If you know, we hold ourselves accountable too to stuff that we make calls, especially inside the community. Yeah. But it's, you know, you're not always going to be right. Nobody has a crystal ball, but it's that long term view and long term play. But I think I wanted to end the show on a fun note here. There's just so much negativity, and I've talked about kind of that A block B block rule right on live TV. It's like, hey, whenever Bitcoin is going up and it's flying high, it's the A block. It's the hottest thing in the world. Everybody loves it. They want to talk about it. And then when it goes down like it has in a violent way, again, it's back in the A block or the B block, and everybody's crapping on it. And the same people that were saying, oh, yeah, it looks like the momentum, it's going to fly higher, saying, hey, what does this asset bring? Like, just, you know, is it going to go lower? So I think we just got to remember when you're in the trenches like we are every week, really every day for us. And then if you're listening with us and tune in every week, it's, you know, there's ups and downs. And I think you got to remember when, you know, you're really, really high, there's going to be some fun high stuff and fun clips. But let's go back to, you know, the lows of 2022. you know, and this is how I'm seeing people talk, not as bad, I guess, but let's go back to Jim Cramer in 2022 talking about crypto and Bitcoin.
I do know that, again, the faith of the American people shocked, just shocked. I mean, I still think that I sold him a crypto. I announced everything on TV, what I did with crypto, but I would not touch crypto in a million years because I wouldn't trust the deposit bank.
And you're making no distinction between centralized, decentralized.
They fought regulation. They didn't want regulation, and you don't have regulation. So if you have your money in any of those, I'm not calling you an idiot. I'm just saying you're using a lot of blind faith. And I like to have my money at JP Morgan. And I check on Monday to see whether my balance is there. It feels good.
Look at those prices.
Try getting your money out. When I had money, I'm not going to mention the firm that I had my money in, but it was a fight to get the money out.
Is that an $11 Solana and a $34 Coinbase?
$11 Solana, $34 Coinbase, 1,200 Ethereum, $16,000 Bitcoin.
Jeez.
These were the days. And credit to us. We were making episodes. We were making episodes. And we're still here. So again, sell all your crypto. Wouldn't touch it in a million years. Even Jim Cramer himself has bought crypto since then. But since he said that, you know, Bitcoin's up 500%. So don't get wrapped up. You got to stay level-headed. You got to stay educated. You know, we're not financial advisors. We're just friends talking crypto. This isn't personal financial advice. But when all hope is lost and things are dead, like, take a step back, stay educated. If you're still listening to this episode on the back end, you're obviously doing the right thing. But again, this is when everything's dead and we're not touching it and it's going to zero. I don't know. Sometimes that's the best time. And it's an interesting spot to be having these conversations again with Bitcoin at 80,000, 85,000. Yep. And not 20,000. Right. So like, if can it go lower? Absolutely. Absolutely. If it has a typical retracement of what 70-80% of past cycles, I mean, it could go down to 40, 50, 30. It could go to any price, right? That's what the market is. But it's interesting to see the sky is falling at 80K. And we said this so many times before when we were in fear and Bitcoin was 105K. And we were hitting the fear. And I was like, man, this is awesome. We're hitting fear and Bitcoin's 100K. Now we're in extreme fear. It's 85K. But I thought that was important to kind of go back and fun, but you know, it's one of those times where, you know, don't lose your, unless your thesis has changed. If you've done your research and your thesis has changed, that's one thing, but don't lose your conviction over the sky is falling crowd. Cause that's when you're on one side of the boat.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up, TiVo. You know, we're almost 50 minutes into it, but man, we appreciate everyone watching. I've seen some of you in the chat as I've looked over, giving your support, tuning in, saying what's up. People telling us, hey, we're avid pod listeners, and you know, they're trying to tune into the lives now. Good to have everyone here. Love to see even McNutt's in here. I see him in the chat box. Man, everyone, thank you all for tuning in. It has been another great episode of the Crypto 101 Rundown. And we'll see all of you at the same time. Well, no, not the same time, same place next week. We're taking a little bit of a break.
We can spitball that. We will do one. I think I have one scheduled. If anybody wants to join, they can hop on. I think McNutt and I are scheduled for next Tuesday. We're going to promote that one. And then I'll talk to you offline. We're going to try and do some like a year in review or a 26 outlook just for fun. We won't do that live. And then we'll try and build a backlog of interviews and content. So even though we will be taking a break over the holidays to be with our families, you know, the podcast channel and the YouTube will be active.
There you go. Well, once again, everyone, thank you all for tuning in, and we'll see all of you very, very soon. And if we don't see you before the holidays, we hope you have a great holiday and we will see you afterwards. Take care.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.